Blinds.com is kicking off the savings early with Black Friday mega deals all month long. Avoid the home renovation overwhelm. Swapping out old blinds for custom window coverings is a small project with big results. And Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. It's a busy season. Skip the long lines or waiting around all day just to get a quote. With Blinds.com, shopping online doesn't mean sacrificing on quality, style, or service. A Blinds.com design expert can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. We can even handle everything from measure to install. And you can get window treatments for your whole home installed for just one low cost. With over 25 million windows covered, Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Shop Black Friday mega deals all month long at Blinds.com. Get up to 45% off site-wide, plus premium doorbusters, and a free professional measure right now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Judd Sirott on the call with Nesson there. The Bruins come away with an overtime win over the Calgary Flames. By the way, that was a great call by Judd. I think Judd's really slid into the TV broadcast side of things very well. I'm enjoying his calls when I watch on Nesson. Just wanted to put that out there. I know we rip on the announcers all the time. No, I think Judd's doing a good job.
He does a good job.
I enjoyed that call. And I think that the Bruins certainly enjoyed that win. I know Jim Montgomery did, because boy, oh boy, did they almost blow that one last night. That would have been as bad a loss as they've had this year if they had not come out with that. And they've gotten shut out by the Flyers. They've had bad games this year, but I don't know. Blowing a 2-goal lead in the third period like that, I don't know that there would have been a worse loss than that if Marchand hadn't saved the day there in overtime, because that was careening towards being, you're fired, everybody's fired, get out of here, get out of my face. It was going to be one of those kind of losses.
It is the most dangerous lead in hockey, right?
It sure is.
2-goal lead, and it looked that way for them. But, yeah, I do think that may have been the final nail in the coaching coffin of Montgomery. And it's weird to talk about it that way, because I've always, way back in the day, the first time the Patriots lost to the Giants in the Super Bowl, in the middle of that season, Tom Coughlin was going to be fired. It was like almost accepted that he was going to be fired. And then like they go on a run, they win the Super Bowl, and you're like, ooh, guess we're glad we didn't fire the guy
right
a month ago or 2 weeks ago. And it's such a tenuous nature or whatever relationship. And I think we all think it's going to end in a firing, right? Isn't that, I mean, other than maybe Razor. Razor still seems to be.
Razor's more, holding out. I think Scoops Keefe, and he said that the seat was very hot, and I don't know if that cooled it off much last night, but I don't think...
No, you almost blew it. This was more a blown game than it was a get-right, feel-good, right the ship. Although I will say, I thought Brad Marchand, forget the final goal. Well, don't forget the final goal, because that was a really important goal.
It was pretty important.
But I thought he was really active. I thought that was a good sign of maybe a spark has been lit. And I know he talked about, they continue to talk about this thing of thinking. Everybody's thinking. And if you're thinking in an NHL game, you can't play. And he even talked about that last night. But I thought that was a really good sign. Him showing some spark, and I know he took a penalty.
Right as the third period started, I was like, all right, here we go. Just close it out. Oh, penalty. Oh, right. Power play goal. Oh, yep. Another one. Oh, it's tied.
Oh, yeah. He could have been the GOAT. He absolutely could have been,
man.
A little.
He set off that chain of events, yeah.
Yep, and then he got done what he needed to get done in the end, and Lindholm with a great takeaway there to feed him in front of the net. That was great to see those two. And maybe that's part of the spark with Marchand. I don't know. Maybe those guys are going to click, because it's been an open talking point with Montgomery that Lindholm and Pasta just didn't. He might have said oil and water, or maybe Fluto wrote oil and water. Like they just didn't click the way everybody thought they were going to click. Well, maybe Lindholm will click with Marchand and spark him.
Yeah, one thing that you kept seeing, and this I think led to some of these goals here, this defensive group, the turnovers are, it's almost every time, like 50-50 when they get the puck back there and try and break it out. I'm expecting a turnover half the time. Yep. Like, really, like I'm expecting that to happen. These are just the ones that were recorded, and sometimes I think they miss some of these. 5 for McAvoy, 5 giveaways, 4 for Lauri, 3 for Wotherspoon, Zadorov had one. Carlo had one. Lindholm didn't have any, so good for him. But everybody else, just handing it over, repeatedly getting punked on the forecheck. And it's not just against the Panthers. Like, we saw the Panthers do this to them in those two games early on in the year, and we both were like, oh, man, like, they really got to do something about that forecheck. Yep. I thought they got big and strong. I thought they were going to be pushing these guys around. Instead, they're getting their pants ripped down here on the forecheck every single time, right? And then you go up against the Calgary Flames, who, I'm sorry, aren't the Panthers. I don't know if they're a bad team. Brian in the email today was like, oh, they're a bad team. I don't know if they're a bad team. I don't think they're that great. But they were getting right after it and making these defenders, the decor, look pretty bad. And this has been going on all year. I mean, really, this has been a thing that they just can't shake. And I don't know where it came from. I don't know if that's a Montgomery thing. I don't know what to attribute that to. I tend to attribute it to, like, toughness. I hate to say it. These are hockey players. But you're turning it over that much in your own end. Or even sometimes in their end. It just, it doesn't, yep. It's very sloppy. And it's a lot of getting pushed off the puck.
Yeah, I do think the D has been the biggest issue for this team all year long. And I think that has hindered the goaltending at times. I think it's hindered the, as you said, ability to transition into the offensive end and have offensive opportunities. I think if there was one thing, if you could do like the Harry Potter magic wand, boom, fix something, the defense is where you would start with this team, because I think that is what's dragging them down and has hindered them. And I don't know what the solution is, because I don't, you know, we don't have any obvious reasons to point to for that. I actually think Zadorov has been pretty good. So I don't really know, you know, you don't have a major, it's not like McAvoy is coming off a contract holdout. It's not like,
right.
You know, there's something specific you can point to, but they need to be better. And I think if they're better, I do think you'll see in both directions, behind them and in front of them, everything else will improve.
Text line is saying Don Sweeney is the one who should be in trouble. It's weird to see how sports reporters and pundits are afraid to call out Sweeney. Who'd I call out yesterday, Andy?
Sweeney.
I called out Sweeney. And Neely,
by extension,
for that
Neely.
Also Cam Neely. And I agree. I don't think Montgomery should be getting all the heat for this. I think that's really ridiculous to just put it all on him and say, yeah, you know what, Monty, like, you had the best, you did whip this team into shape, had the best regular season ever 2 years ago. You had another top of the Atlantic Division type season last year. And now all of a sudden we make a bunch of changes, we give them to you, and now you're a bad coach. Like, I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't buy that. He may be overrated. Maybe those rosters played a little over their head and they would have been good with any coach. I'll allow for that. But I don't think that he suddenly forgot how to coach and his system doesn't work anymore because what? You know, Sweeney is kind of the common denominator here. They've had three coaches and they keep having the same problems. Like, that's kind of annoying. And I think in this particular case, now you're starting to get, this is not the, I've said this before, this is not the Bruins business model. The business model is win a bunch of games early in the season, get everybody all excited, and then disappoint them at the end of the year. You can't disappoint them now. You can't have people disengaging with the team now. That is not how it works here in Boston. That is not what the Jacobs have hired you to do. You got to get everybody hooked and excited for the first 2-3 months, and then at the end of the season, that's when you let them down, and that's when they all get disappointed. And then they forget about it in the offseason, and it starts back up again. It's like an ecosystem. You can't have them disappointed now. That screws it all up.
But if you want to question Lindholm and Zadorov and whatever, the fits, I'll listen to that. But how do you explain the almost roster-wide regression that, like, nobody's playing well, that Marchand has been terrible to start the year?
Well, Marchand, I can explain Marchand in the sense that he's old and he just had another bunch of surgeries. So, I mean, if you want to answer for him, then that's probably the easiest one. The rest of these guys, I have no idea. I don't know what's up with Zacha. I don't know what's up with Pasternak. Like, I don't know what's up with any of the defensemen. Like, I really couldn't tell you. It's just, it's maddening because it's a lot of these same people.
And that's where I think the focus falls on Montgomery. Because when you have regression in specific players, you know, or team-wide like this, it generally, people point the finger at the coach, right? Yeah. Like, that's the person in charge of that. And I'm not saying Sweeney's done a great job. And did I just see something? I actually wanted to click on it. I know you wouldn't have seen it. Is Sweeney doing some other job at the same time? Is he
building, moonlighting at a hospital or something? Like,
no, it came across my Athletic feed, and I wanted to, it's something about him building like a Team Canada roster or something.
Oh, yes. Building Canada's Four Nations rosters while managing Bruins drama, Don Sweeney's GM juggling act. Yes.
Yeah.
He's part of the Team Canada thing. That's
right. I feel
right,
like, man, I need to read that up, see what that's all about, because you're right. Whether it's just a bad look or not, that's not a headline I want to read from my scuffling team and their scuffling GM.
Sweeney has officially been, this was 2 days ago, officially been named general manager of Team Canada in the Four Nations faceoff. Jim Nill with the Dallas Stars is going to be the assistant GM, along with Sweeney, Will also be an assistant GM for Team Canada in the 2026 Winter Olympics. So he's getting the nation's face-off thing, which is next year, and the Olympics are the year after that. He'll be an assistant GM for the Olympic team.
Okay. I mean, I'm guessing is more like a talking point than it is actually going to take a lot of his time, and like he can't build a Bruins roster and make moves he needs to make for the Bruins, but...
It's probably a little easier to build the Team Canada roster if I was just going to spitball.
Probably.
I think it's probably, you know, one of those rosters kind of builds itself. Like, what do you really even have to do? 617-779-7937. It's an interesting point, though, about his attention and where it may lie. We will get more into the Bruins and their pillar power rankings, which we've been doing this for all the teams, the Bruins pillars, roster, front office, coaching staff, etc. We'll get into all of that with your phone calls right after Stiz.
Blinds.com is kicking off the savings early with Black Friday mega deals all month long. Avoid the home renovation overwhelm. Swapping out old blinds for custom window coverings is a small project with big results. And Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. It's a busy season. Skip the long lines or waiting around all day just to get a quote. With Blinds.com, shopping online doesn't mean sacrificing on quality, style, or service. A Blinds.com design expert can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. We can even handle everything from measure to install. And you can get window treatments for your whole home installed for just one low cost. With over 25 million windows covered, Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Shop Black Friday mega deals all month long at Blinds.com. Get up to 45% off site-wide, plus premium doorbusters, and a free professional measure right now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Get you caught up on what's trending. It's the voice of Brad Marchand, who had the overtime game winner. He's had a couple of those this year, and they both came at a time where it saved Montgomery's job. Did you notice that? I heard Jones and Keith talking about this. They were so right. It's like every time he has one of those, it's right as Montgomery's about to get fired, or when it seems like the seat is the hottest after like two straight losses or something. And there comes Brad Marchand in overtime to save the day and keep Monty in the behind the bench just another day or another 2 days, or we'll see how long that ends up going. Again, I don't think you can blame all this on him, but I do think they're going to blame it on someone. And someone on the text line was like, interesting take, Arcan. You really think the Bruins executives sit down in the boardroom every summer and say, let's have a good regular season and then choke in the playoffs? No, I don't think it's planned out exactly like that. But I do think, and it's just, look at what Montgomery's doing here. When you have a good start to the year and then blow it in the playoffs, you get another chance. When you have a bad start to the year, you don't get a chance to turn it around. No. You got to be good to start the year. That's how we do it. That's what the Bruins want. That's how they operate, especially when you're in a contract year. I do think there's something to that. I was being tongue-in-cheek a little bit, but not completely. Like, I do think there is something to that, absolutely. By the way, if you miss any part of the show, or you can have it delivered to your phone daily, subscribe to the WEEI Afternoons podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcast, and you can listen to WEEI on your smart speaker. Just say play 93.7 WEEI. The Bruins, as an organization, are to be examined right now in this edition of Andy Hart's Pillar Power Rankings. Or did I miss that? Am I saying that right?
No, that's right.
It's Pillar Power Rankings. I thought I was missing a word.
No. Well, when we do Patriots, it's Patriots.
It was the Patriots Pillar Power Rankings. That's
there
right.
was an extra P. This would be Bruins
extra,
Pillar Power
It was
rankings.
Extra alliterative, and it made me think like I was screwing it up. The Bruins Pillar Power Rankings. Where do you want to start?
Stop spitting. Pillar Power. Sounds like you spit every time you say that.
Well, hey, what do you want from me? All right.
Mic down.
Where are we going to start?
So let's just set the table, just so everybody knows. We've done this with the Bruins. We've done it with the Celtics. No, we did it with the Red Sox. We've done it with a couple of the teams.
Yes.
And it basically is ownership, executive branch, coaching, and for hockey, we're going to do roster, goalie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Like we did starting pitching and lineup for Red Sox, starting quarterback and roster for Patriots. For hockey.
Ownership, front office, coaching, and goalie / roster.
No. Goalie and roster are separate.
Oh, okay. Sorry. All right.
Good. So that's how we get to the five. We have five for each one of these. There's a a top five power ranking, and mm-hmm. five is the area of the team, the organization that you have the least amount of faith in, and one is the part of the franchise you have the most faith in. So mm-hmm. I'll let you go first. What's number five?
Number five for me is front office.
Ooh,
front office is number five. I am. I feel like I've had the wool pulled over my eyes enough times here. I don't want to put coaching down there because I just feel like that'd be cliche. I don't love the roster. The roster's obviously not great, but it's a product of this front office, and it's a product of missed drafts. It's a product of having to do all this extra stuff, spend all this money in the offseason. It's a product of not just swallowing your pride and giving Jeremy Swayman the offer that you should have given him months and months ago so that he could have been ready to start the year. And, yeah, in general, I just think it's a lot of hubris and a lot of bad draft picks, and outside of really the trade deadline moves that he's made, a lot of whiffs. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I think that's the biggest problem with this team right now is the way it's been assembled, the way it's been built, and I think that falls on the front office. So they're number five for me.
How dare you call me cliche before I even name one person on my list?
That was preemptive, yes.
The five spot for me is the coach. I've never really loved him. We've never really vibed. We've never really connected, even when he was setting records for points.
Not a love connection.
No. The whole goalie Bob era and handling of things really, really stuck in my craw. I don't think he's handled the goalie situation very well the last couple years in general. And now for the here and now, and these are timely. We've talked about doing these at certain inflection points during seasons and years. This is a timely spot. And right now, I'm sorry, but when the totality of your roster essentially underachieves, that's something to do with coaching. That's a problem with the culture, the dressing room. Like, I don't know what it is. There's something going on there. So Jim Montgomery would be my five spot. In my four spot would be the executive branch that you just discussed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do think over the long haul, they've done a pretty good job building a roster. Obviously, you can't have the number of points they've had in the regular season in recent years without having talent. And if we're going to be honest, we can go back to opening week when we talked to Razor and Scott, and they both said, yeah, I think if things go the right way, this is a Stanley Cup contender. So we can think what we want about certain fits and the way things have evolved or not fit. But heading into the season, a lot of people thought this was a pretty talented hockey team. So, but it also has its warts. I do think there's a weirdness with the Neely Sweeney pairing.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the decision-making process. Like, we fixate on that more in other sports, and it's just sort of accepted with the Bruins that Cam Neely's here, and below him is Sweeney, and mm-hmm. they're a pairing, and Neely's been here forever, and the whole thing. I'm not sure I love this setup in this relationship, so I'll put them at number four.
All right, good. I have a coach at number four. I don't think that Montgomery deserves all the blame for this, but I do think he should shoulder some of it. And I also hated the goalie Bob stuff, too. It was a lot of the things that you said were things that didn't necessarily rub me the right way when it comes to Montgomery and the coaching and sort of the that whole thing with the vowels. You remember that? Like, it's just
I hated it.
I didn't like that either. And it's kind of cringy. And at first, it seemed like the team really liked him and was really there ready to play for him. And now it doesn't seem like there's that same kind of relationship, which you could maybe put on the roster, but you also have to put on the coach. He's the guy who's there, and he's the one who has to deal with it or fix it or whatever, and it doesn't seem like that's necessarily happening. For number three, I have the roster. I have the roster at number three. They're underperforming. They're underachieving, and I think they deserve to be beat up for that. I think that, in general, you look at a roster like this, and you expected a lot of these forwards to take a step forward. You expected Zacha to get better. I expected Geeky to get better. I expected a lot more from guys who are really not doing anything. Charlie Coyle's fallen off the face of the earth, although he has been a little bit better lately. I still don't have a ton of confidence in him. And I think that, in general, the rough start, and this is an extension of the front office who put this roster together, but I think in some cases you can't blame them because some of these guys were on track to be hitting their primes right now, and they're just not. And I think that's a roster problem, that's an individual player problem, and something that some of these guys need to figure out pretty quick here because it's not going well. So I have them at three.
My three spot is the same as your three spot. It is the roster. I think there is talent. We talked about it. I think you have some of the pillars on the ice. You have theoretically a goalie, a star defenseman, a star scorer. Like, you have some of the pieces at all three levels that you'd like to have. and yet it's not working. And certainly the guys they brought in have not been home runs, have not hit the ice just flying to start the year, I wouldn't say. But I do think there's talent. There's more talent than there is quality hockey being played, right? And you can question, is Marchand getting old? Is he lost, or is he just not playing well? Like, I think the roster is good enough, absolutely, to be a playoff team, absolutely to win a round of the playoffs. I think they're similar to last year. I think they can win a playoff round, and then from there it's probably gravy. But I think they have the roster's the least of their problems using our power ranking system. That means in the two spot, I have the goalie.
Me too.
Jeremy Swayman.
Me too. How about this? These are pretty close. Aside from 4 and 5, it's basically the same.
And historically speaking, okay, so to let the cat out of the bag, that means we both have ownership in the one spot, which I think is funny. You know, 30, 40 years ago, the way the Jacobs family was viewed and, like, their business model, but all of that was what? It was pre-cap, the cap they wanted, this financial system they wanted. Within the parameters of the NHL financial system, they spend to the cap. They
pretty
spend
good owners.
Money,
right? Pretty like good owners, all things considered,
I mean, hey, Red Sox, they retain their talent. Pasta, look at him. He's still wearing a B. Swayman, look at him. He's still wearing a B. McAvoy, look at him. He's still wearing a B. They find a way within a hard cap system to keep their star talent, and I think you have to give them credit for that. Like, I don't – is there a ownership negative or downside in recent years that you can really point to? Because I can't really think of one.
No, I can't. I really can't. They spend to the cap. They do what you're supposed to do. They don't get in the way. They don't impose themselves on decision-making or any of the hockey stuff, which, I don't know, maybe this last year they should have. But, like, in general, I'd say no. This is the exact – the Bruins ownership group, while they haven't produced a lot of winners lately, I'd say are the ideal in terms of what you have here. Maybe now that Wick's gone, because you would say the Celtics before that. But now it's the Bruins. Now it's the Bruins. That ownership group is ideal. They spend to the cap. They stay out of the way, and you barely even know they're there. That's what you want from owners, isn't it?
Yeah. I would say I'd like them to get over the hump a little more. And I don't know if that's on them necessarily or the four other pillars that we ranked beneath them doing their jobs or not doing their jobs. But I do. I find it so... The ownership, as we do these, I find the way we look at ownership very funny. Like, John Henry's got a boatload of World Series trophies, and yet no one cares for him. Jeremy Jacobs was maybe the most hated owner in Boston sports, maybe in all of sports, for a period of time.
He was right up there, sure, yeah.
And now he's in the number one spot in our pillar power rankings. And I think that's part of that is his achievements, but some of it is also the way we feel about other aspects of the team right now. Feeling down about other aspects of the team is also a factor there.
Yeah, definitely. I'm surprised you have the goalie so high. I thought that would be an easy chance for you to take a shot at Swayman and a shot at me and a shot at all the people who thought that, you know, Swayman was worth paying all that money, because I really am surprised to see him up that high on your list.
He just got ahead of himself with his $10-plus million requests and wanting to be the highest goalie paid ever and setting the bar for future goalies like he was freaking Michael Jordan or Nolan Ryan or some iconic figure in the history of sports. He's a good young goalie. Now, I think he needs to be a little better than he's been for the first few games of the season, but I expect that to happen. I think
5-on-5, he's like a top 10, right? 5-on-5, he's great. It's when it's 4-on-5, which often is with this team, that he's not
very
so
much.
Good.
So. Yeah. But I also expected him to not necessarily play well after dealing with the stress or whatever anxiety of the contract and not being prepared physically.
Yeah, not ramping up. That's the main thing.
That whole thing. Yeah. That whole thing, I expected it. But no, he's a good young goalie. I'd like to put him someday number one on the list, because that probably means it was after he had some great postseason run or something. And I say he's the best on your team.
Yeah, definitely. All right, there you go. Those are our pillar power rankings for the Boston Bruins. We both have owner, goalie, roster. I have the coach fourth and front office fifth. Hart has those flipped, front office fourth, coach fifth. And there you go. That is the Bruins edition of that. We only have one left, and that's the Boston Celtics. And I don't know how I'm going to do that. Like, with these, it's easy because there's a lot of stuff to not like. You know, well, I'm going to rank this down at the bottom. I don't know who's going to be number five for the Celtics. I like everything about the Celtics. Everybody likes everything about the Celtics. That's going to be the hardest one.
Five tied for the first spot, number one, and then two through five.
We have to do. We have to rank them. We have to rank them.
It's how we all do it.
That's what it is. It's a ranking.
Everybody's got a favorite kid, a favorite parent, a favorite sibling. It's the reality of the world.
Some aspect of the Celtics has to be the worst. I don't know what it would be.
I don't know yet either.
Yeah.
But I'll cross that road when we get there.
I suppose we will.
mine could also be very like reactionary. Like I could be, you know, Joe Mazzulla might do something dumb or say something's dumb, and the day later we do the pillar power rankings. Well, it's going to hurt his ranking.
Maybe. We have a funny quote from Mazzulla from before the Golden State Warriors game about him and Jaylen Brown having conversations, which we'll get to later on in the show. But right now, let's go to your phones at 617-779-7937. Jay is in North Carolina with a thought on the Bruins. Go ahead, Jay.
Hey, guys. Hey, appreciate your program. Unlike the day program, you guys are spot on, and your comments are really right on.
That's right.
I appreciate
Thank you.
That.
Unlike those other shows.
Screw
absolutely.
Those day
right.
part programs.
I ain't gonna say it. But anyways, if Jeremy Sammon and Omar go to a tie, will they give their immortal greetings? I don't know. But listen, my laser focus is not on Montgomery. My focus is on Cam Neely and the deals he's making. What did you get for Omar? I know you have to build up the defense because defense wins championships.
Mm-hmm.
But the main point of my argument is David Pastrnak, who's a great sniper. I think of Ezekiel Elliott in the Dallas Cowboys. When he makes a run, he puts his hand to his mouth, feed me, feed me. Who is feeding David Pastrnak? Because that guy could be good for 60 goals a year if you've got somebody that can feed him. And that's my bone of contention, guys. Thanks for listening.
And thank you for the call, Jay. I appreciate it. And I do think that the playmaking on that top line is taking a hit, sure. Zaka, Coyle, those guys I thought last year were kind of piecing it together. It seemed like that was a temporary fix until they got the guy they wanted. And the guy they wanted ended up being Lindholm, who's been good, not great, and has moved around. Everybody's moved around. But mm-hmm. as for what they got in the Ullmark trade, I'm happy with the Ullmark trade. I'm happy with Kostelic. Kostelic in a first-round pick and... I don't love him, but Korpisalo was pretty good last night. I mean, after that right. first goal, which was a bad goal, after that, I thought he was very good. He was under siege a lot. He made a lot of good saves. He had like 33 saves or whatever it was, 34 saves on 37 shots. Like, that's a good night. I don't think he's a good player, but I do like that you got Kostelic. He's been awesome. And the first-round pick, who I forget what they used it on, but, yeah, I mean, listen, that's a pretty good return, I'd say, for a guy like Linus Ullmark. I don't have a big problem with that. And that's sort of the thing with Sweeney. His trades are good. He just needs to be the trades guy, right? Get a draft guy, get a free agency guy. He stays on as the trade guy. He'll do all the trades. But someone else, I feel like, needs to take over these other responsibilities because it's just not working.
Well, and that's where I don't know enough about the inner workings. Where does Neely impart his influence
right.
in terms of contract? Like, we know very publicly he brought up numbers in a contract dispute with Jeremy Swayman, right? Yep. 64 million reasons. So... he's in the number world. He's thinking of numbers. I just wonder, I always wonder how much of the decision-making comes down to Neely, how much clears Neely's desk, or how much autonomy Sweeney has. And I think that's a tough spot for Sweeney to be in because it almost feels like when things go well, it's like Cam Neely's Bruins. He oversees it all. He's mm-hmm. the legend. He's the guy. And then when things go poorly, it's like Sweeney needs to stick to trades. He sucks at contracts.
Right.
And I don't really know the power structure exactly how it works.
Yeah, it's a good point. Boston Bruins, they are off tonight. The Boston Celtics are playing tonight. They're playing the Brooklyn Nets, another team that shoots a ton of three-pointers. Jaylen Brown out for this one. Officially concerned. We're all officially concerned yep. about Jaylen Brown. Everybody concerned back there in the back room about Jaylen Brown. How can you not be at this point? We're racking up games here of DMPs as he sits out with this hip injury. Joe Mazzulla had a very funny exchange with a reporter yesterday about it. We will get to that and preview this game tonight next. Bravo.
He's a menace.
That was good stuff. That was good stuff from whoever the reporter was. Do we know who that was? I was just trying to figure it out with Brian. Do you know who that was, Tish?
No, I do not.
Andy, any ideas?
Good job, though.
No? Don't know? All right. Well, I think we maybe narrow it down, right? It wasn't Washburn. Wasn't Forsberg. Wasn't B-Rob. Wasn't Joe Sway. He left for, like, Oklahoma City.
Wasn't it Turpin.
Wasn't Turp.
No, I don't think so.
Wasn't Mego.
No.
Could have been Himmelsbach. Could that have been Himmelsbach? Huh?
Maybe.
Maybe Himmelsbach. Maybe that Bobby Manning kid, CLNS.
Don't know him.
Could have been him. Maybe it. I don't know. I'm trying to think of other people I know. Oh, Corrales. Definitely wasn't Corrales.
Nope.
I don't know who it was. Yeah. I'm going to say it was either Manning or Himmelsbach.
Did he happen to mumble about his hip at all?
Yeah. See, I don't know. Because those two guys, I don't hear him do radio that much. So if it was one of them, then I wouldn't recognize the voice right away. So that does make sense. But either way, good question. Good back and forth, whoever you are. It was a good back and forth. And I like how he didn't let Mazzulla off the hook there. I mean, this is a big thing. This is an injury. And Mazzulla was being hilarious about it. That was funny. Well, we mumble, you know. I couldn't understand him. I don't know what he said. I'm not giving you squat, maybe Adam Himmelsbach. Like, I'm not going to tell you anything. Like, that was funny. I enjoyed that. And as much as I enjoyed that, I'm petrified as to what the hell is going on here with Jaylen Brown. And I know if I'm scared, Andy, you've got to be beside yourself.
So I am. I will say that the lighthearted nature with which Mazzulla dealt with it has me a little less concerned. But I am very much concerned that an injury that I ignored at first, because I ignore most NBA injuries and presume they are one-off, load management reasons, rationale, blah, 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 is now multiple games that's extending out. And now that I take it more seriously, I think a hip injury for a guy who plays defense, is explosive, moves laterally, up and down. You know, you can't hide your hip in any of those motions. You can't, if your hip isn't right. Now, that's the one thing I will say. Are they treating it as such and maybe being overly cautious so that it doesn't linger over the course of the season?
Which,
and
I don't mind that, by the way. I don't think that's a terrible plan at all.
100% agree with it, because, you know, oh, he could be back after two games, but then if he re-injures it, then it'll be three of on top of those two. Let's just get it so he feels close to 100%. And go on and move forward and hopefully put this in the rearview mirror. But no, this is growing more and more concerning to me by the day. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a concerning thing. And whether or not, you know, the Warriors game would have been different with Jaylen Brown, I certainly think
it would have been.
You look at a guy like him who got pretty big in the offseason, right? Not that he was a little guy to begin with, but he bulked up a lot.
Yoked.
He got pretty yoked, and now here he is a couple of games into the season and his hip's acting up. And I just, you know, like,
what are you insinuating?
I'm not necessarily saying one thing leads to another or not, but when you're an explosive player like that, and you put on a bunch of weight, like, look at Zion Williamson. Like, muscle weighs you down a little bit, doesn't it? Like, that's just gravity. Like, you know what I mean?
I don't think Zion's only problem is muscle.
No, it's definitely not. But, like, that's weight, right? Like, that.
So are you worried that Jaylen Brown is going down kind of the, well, David Boston was the famous wide receiver from Ohio State.
Well, David Boston was juiced out of his mind, so not necessarily that, but right? Didn't he get busted for steroids?
Oh, yeah. No, he had some sort of dysmorphia. Like, he just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, like he was the Incredible Hulk. I did think of that, honestly, because I do the idea, and I wondered at the time if Jaylen bulked up to try to play in the paint more and, you know, some post-up opportunities and physical areas like that, because I do think he's going to decide where he wants to sort of evolve as a player as he hits sort of his maturity as a professional athlete here. He joked about only 2 years left in his 20s and, you know, getting older. Is he still going to be an explosive player, or is he going to become more of a, you know, they all do it, like Charles Barkley or Shaq or these guys that were explosive tend to get a little bigger. Now, they did it a little more on the chub end than the actual, like, muscular end, like he did this offseason. They got chubby. Okay, maybe I said it a little weird.
All right, well, you acknowledged it for the first time ever.
Okay, maybe I did say that.
Okay.
But they went more chubby than they did muscular and putting on muscular weight. He went muscular weight. And because the reason I was giving you a hard time is we had a texter, I'm just going to say it, like 3 weeks ago, and I ignored it at the time, but he was like, huh, interesting. He bulks up with 12 pounds of muscle and then has a weird injury in the offseason. Think he's on something? No, I don't actually think he's on something.
I don't think he's on something. That's not what I was implying when I said that. It's just you know, he changed his body. His body's different now, and I don't think he did it in any untowards way. I think you saw what he was doing. He was underwater doing, lifting weights and stuff. Like, that's what he died. I know he's freaky about it. His health, that's fine, but it's just, you know, his body's changed over the offseason and he has an injury right away. That's it.
I mean, hit puberty.
Yeah, exactly.
Your body is changing in very mysterious ways.
There's hair growing in weird places. No, it's like, yeah, but I mean, he's gotten a lot bigger and he got injured right away to start the year. I don't necessarily know if that's a coincidence. That's all I'm saying.
Or they were due. I mean, those two guys have been relatively healthy for the bulk of their career, really. Not to knock on wood or jinx anything.
Sure.
But, you know, injuries happen. You know, it's the reason why when we do all those stupid, like, what could derail this team? You start with injuries, because injuries happen to every team, every sport. I mean, look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. They should have one of the best wide receiver cores in football, right? except they're not playing because their wide receivers are all hurt. So it can happen to anyone. The optimistic side of Andy on this, on Jaylen Brown, is saying they're being overly cautious to make sure this doesn't linger on and become a continuous problem throughout the season that then you're wondering, oh, is he going to be full strength for the postseason, that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. They got the Brooklyn Nets tonight, that game at TD Garden, tipping off at 7:30. I kind of like the Nets a little bit. I like Cam Thomas a lot. Cam Thomas is having a good year. He's averaging like 25 points per game to start the year, which I wasn't expecting to see. They got a couple other guys there, and like Claxton and Schroeder and Finney Smith and some of these other guys. They're not a very good team, I wouldn't say, but could be scrappy, scrappy little team. Not even to the point of like an Indiana Pacers. I think they're a tier below them, but. Coming off a bad loss, I'd be interested in seeing how the Celtics respond here. I don't think they have to give it their all to beat the Brooklyn Nets, but, you know, a team like this, however many losses you think they're going to have this year, it's interesting to see how they bounce back from them. I'd be interested in seeing that tonight. We saw it already earlier on in the year when they lost to the Pacers. They bounced right back against some bad teams, and were right back on track after that before Golden State, of course. So, you know, outside of that, I don't think there's too much to this matchup.
Do you consider that a bad loss?
What?
You said coming off a bad loss, and I don't know that I consider that a bad loss. I think the Warriors
Good
team.
Sure, I mean,
not a great loss. Like, you're at home. I think you should have won that game. You were favored.
It was
by
the
six
revenge
points.
Game. Like, they were favored.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think they're a better, more talented team than the Warriors. Yeah,
but I don't know that it's a bad loss. Like, it's not something you're embarrassed.
You're right.
By,
this would be a bad loss.
Would be a bad loss.
This would be a bad loss.
This would absolutely be a bad loss. And the fact that you won, I mean, you lost back-to-back games would absolutely be a problem for me. You have no right losing this game, especially coming off however you want to describe that loss to the Warriors. You should be disappointed in the way you finished that game. 100%.
Agreed. And when I say bad loss, I mean in terms of, they're not a bad team, but it was a game that they were all hyped up for. It was supposed to be this big circle it on the calendar type of game, and they came up short. And so that makes it for this team, that's a bad loss. I mean, honestly, like for this team, most losses are going to be looked at as a bad loss, aren't they? You're the Celtics. You shouldn't be. Every time you lose a game, the magnifying glass is going to come up to you, and they're going to say, why'd this happen? You're better than them. It's going to be considered a bad. All their losses, I think, will be considered bad losses.
Except
if it's Cleveland.
Well, no, but I would put Golden State in that category.
Right.
Like you said, there's five or six good teams in the NBA. You're one of them, and you lost to one of them. So I think outside of that is where you get bad losses. The other question I have is because I got to look. Are they playing on the Cup Court tonight? Because the Celtics keep putting out photos of the damn Cup Court, and yet I haven't seen the Cup Court.
Tonight is not a Cup Court game.
Oh, then why do they keep doing this? Like
the first Cup Court game is
NBA Cup Court really pops. So.
The first one is going to be on the 12th, and it's against Atlanta, and it's during group play of the NBA Cup. So that's coming up, but it does not start tonight. So,
and why did they change the name from in-season tournament to NBA Cup? Wasn't it NBA in-season tournament last?
Yeah, in-season tournament's a little, I don't know, a little on the nose. It's like calling it the afternoon show. No. We know it's in season.
Touché.
It's a tournament. Let's call it something else. Let's call it the Cup.
You need say no more. That hit home as soon as you said it that way.
Thank you.
Explained well. Thank you.
It does. It explains a lot. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Don't forget, you can stream the show or listen on demand anytime. Just download the Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. Save WEEI as a favorite, and you can listen wherever you go. When we return, Gerard Mayo had an interesting take today about Drake May and the one thing he does better than just about any QB in the league. Mayo doesn't really want to explore that too much. We'll get to that next.
Blinds.com is kicking off the savings early with Black Friday mega deals all month long. Avoid the home renovation overwhelm. Swapping out old blinds for custom window coverings is a small project with big results. And Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. It's a busy season. Skip the long lines or waiting around all day just to get a quote. With Blinds.com, shopping online doesn't mean sacrificing on quality, style, or service. A Blinds.com design expert can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. We can even handle everything from measure to install. And you can get window treatments for your whole home installed for just one low cost. With over 25 million windows covered, Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Shop Black Friday mega deals all month long at Blinds.com. Get up to 45% off select styles. Plus, score premium doorbusters and a free professional measure right now at Blinds.com. That's up to 45% off and a free measure now at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.